Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peake, and welcome to episode 73 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Today, we're talking about a rebel runner. Boston Marathon's first female runner keeps women active. Oh, yeah. And before we get into this, I want to make sure you know that this episode of Her is made possible by our friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized just for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, go on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode and rate this podcast and review us, because guess what? I read these things and I love to hear from everyone. So please do. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
Rebel runner indeed. Oh my goodness. Well, we have with us a real sports icon, especially in women's running. And this is Catherine Switzer, and so many of us know her name because she made herself quite famous 50 years ago as a spry 20-year-old brunette who stepped onto the Boston Marathon course for the first time like a pilgrim going to a shrine. She had no grand plans that day, but she wanted to run that storied marathon. Oh, boy, and that started a journey that you all have to hear about. What's wonderful about Catherine is I can call her a friend. I've known her for a number of years now, and I was stupid enough at one point to actually run with her. What was I thinking? But anyway, Catherine is the author of Marathon Woman, Running and Walking for Women Over 40, co-author of 26.2 and Marathon Stories. She is an iconic athlete, sports and social advocate, author, and Emmy Award-winning television commentator. She was the first woman to officially enter and run the Boston Marathon. She's been honored widely for her achievements, most recently being inducted into the USA National Women's Hall of Fame for creating positive social change. The ramifications of this work is both joyful and profound, changing forever the face of sports, health, and opportunities for women around the world, and fearlessly empowering millions beyond the finish line, especially through the nonprofit 261 Fearless Incorporated, which we'll hear more about. Catherine, welcome to Her Radio.
Well, Pam, how wonderful to be back on the air with you and to talk and to catch up. It's great. Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm just exhausted reading your bio. I mean, girlfriend, get a life.
Well, you should have been running with me 2 weeks ago at the Boston Marathon. That was an amazing
Now, wait a minute. I ran the 2012 Boston, which was, by history, the hottest Boston Marathon. And I want to thank you very much for that. Let's just say no personal bests were done that day. And I was kind of happy to see the finish line. But, you know, I think I'm the direct descendant of a camel or something, because I was okay out there. Not so much for a whole lot of other people, but whatever. But let's get back to you. What led you 50 years ago to enter the Boston Marathon? What were you thinking?
Well, honestly, I love to run, and I've been running since I was 12, and my coach at Syracuse University, who was not a real coach, he was just a volunteer, there were no women's sports at Syracuse University in 1966. So I went out and I was training with the men's cross-country team. I met this volunteer coach who had who was ancient. I mean, he was 50 years old. Can you imagine?
When
you're 19, somebody who's 50 seems ancient. But anyway, he had run 15 Boston Marathons. And every day out on the cross-country course would regale me with stories about this wonderful race that changed his life. And he told me a different story every day. And when I said to him, well, I've always wanted to run a marathon. I'd like to run the Boston Marathon. And he said, a woman can't do it. Women are too weak and too fragile. And I mean, you know, you remember the old prevailing myth. Well, maybe you don't because you're a lot younger than I am. But the prevailing myth, even in the 60s, was that if a woman did anything arduous, you know, she was going to turn into a man, or she was going to get big legs and grow hair on her chest, or her uterus was going to fall out. Something dire would happen if you were an athlete. And I mean, I thought all this was nonsense, but he obviously kind of believed it. And he said women are just too weak, too fragile. They might injure themselves. So we argued and argued. And finally, I said, listen, women have run marathons in the past, not wearing bib numbers. A woman at Boston jumped out of the bushes and ran last year. And he didn't believe it. He absolutely didn't believe it. And he said, if I showed him in practice, he'd be the first person to take me to Boston. So hot diggity. You know, I had a coach and I had a goal. And we trained hard and we ran the distance in practice. In fact, we ran 31 miles that day, which is five
now
miles more than the Boston distance.
Yeah.
I wanted to really prove it to him. He passed out at the end of the workout. And when he came to... He was so impressed with women's superior capability and endurance and stamina, which is something that we are now really discovering. He said, look, I'm really proud of you. I'm going to help you sign up for the race. So my intention actually at Boston was just, I turned 20 by then, a 20-year-old kid who just wanted to run her first marathon, just get through it, run it, have the experience. And it was like a reward from my coach. But he insisted that I officially register for the race. He said, look, it's a serious race. You just can't go up there and jump in that thing. And I said, okay. And so, you know, I paid my $2 entry fee and signed the entry form. We went through the rule book, making sure there was nothing against women running. And I signed the application, though. I signed it KB Switzer with my initials.
And, oh, you little, you stealth, you know,
yeah,
you
but
sort
it wasn't
stealthily
to
getting
it.
Yourself in.
Yeah, I know. Everybody thinks I did it on purpose to defraud the establishment, and that's not true. I had been signing my name that way because I was in journalism school. I wanted to be a sports writer, and it seemed like all writers like J.D. Salinger, E.E. Cummings signed their name with their initials. And also, my dad had misspelled my name on my birth certificate, so it was always misspelled. So I started signing my name, you know, at 12 or 13, like KB Switzer. So that's the way the entry went in. They thought it was from a man, and I got a bib number. So there I am at the start with a bunch of guys, 700 guys, all of whom loved me in the race, with saying things like, go for it all the way, and I wish my wife would run, I wish my girlfriend would run, and give me some tips to get them started. They were very, very positive. But I think everybody knows the story about what happened. It's like a mile into the race, the press truck went by, went crazy seeing a woman in the race wearing a bib number. And the race director on the bus lost his temper and thinking that I was making, you know, a fool of him, the great protector of the Boston Marathon. He ran down the street after me and attacked me and tried to rip off my bib number and throw me out of the race and screaming at me and cursing at me. And my boyfriend came to my assistance, who was running with me, and he decked the official instead and knocked him out of the race. And my coach and I and my boyfriend went on to finish. But this was all captured in a series of photographs that were flashed around the world and not only changed my life, but changed women's sports. It was
well,
amazing.
You know, what was interesting, Catherine, is that those pictures, literally, even though we didn't really have that, the whole social media thing going then, obviously, they went viral. I mean, as much as those pictures could go viral, they went viral. I remember when all of that took place. I saw those pictures, and my jaw hit the floor. And it just blew my mind that, I mean, I love the fact that not only did you finish, but you finished ahead of a whole lot of men. Which was kind of interesting too. And the other thing that I wanted to clarify, so you said in the race book, there were no actual written words that said a woman couldn't run?
Yeah, that's another thing that everybody said she should have known it was against the rules. That's not true. They in the official Amateur Athletic Union rule book, they had men's track and field, women's track and field, and then the third category of the rule book was the marathon. And that was a road race, and they had all the measurements and all that kind of stuff, but it didn't say anything about gender in it. The entry form had nothing about gender on it. And so when I said to my coach, I said, well, nothing about gender here. And he said that's because nobody believes a woman could run or would even want to run. So why make up a, you know, why have a rule about it? And I said, well, then are we pushing a point? And he said, look, if it's not in the rule book and, you know, you're going to be in trouble if you don't officially enter, you've got to enter the race. You're a member of the athletic union. So we thought we were following the rules when the officials obviously thought we were trying to fake them out. So it was a collision.
Oh, isn't that fascinating?
Yeah.
All right. So there you were at the finish line of the Boston Marathon, and thus you began a pretty incredible journey. What happened after that?
Well, the journey actually began at, I would say, the moment the official got tossed off the course, because that was the moment when my fear was so huge. I was scared. I was embarrassed. It was the glare of this, all these cameras were on me. I was only a kid, but I did make the decision to finish. I said to my coach, I've got to finish this race now. I've got to finish on my hands and my knees if I have to. And that was a huge decision for a kid, you know? And I mean, because your instinct is get me out of here, go home to my mom. And I said, I'm going to finish because I've trained and I know I can do this. And everybody's going to not believe that women can do it if I don't finish. So it's going to set women back. I have to finish. So, you know, at about 21 miles, though, which is where Heartbreak Hill is, you will recall, all right? You will recall.
Yes, I do recall.
that's when you stop being mad at anybody, you know, and you start to get a sense of, focus. You can't run 21 miles and stay mad anymore. And I got over my anger, but then I got thinking, why aren't women here? And I realized it's because they were afraid and had been told all these myths and would believe all those myths. And so by the time they were 20, it would never occur to them to do something as adventurous and more risky as running a marathon. And I decided, okay, look, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I'm somehow going to try to create the opportunities that are non-intimidating and welcoming for women to get them into running, because running had given me so much empowerment and self-esteem and bravery. And it had translated to all areas of my life. So when I finished the race, I had the plan. This plan was to become a better athlete and was to somehow create those opportunities. But it wasn't even until midnight that night that I realized that my life was going to change. Because up to that point, we thought this was kind of just a weird incident. But when we saw the pictures in the newspaper that night, I said, oh my gosh, this is really something really big. But it was not easy, Pam, because half of the people in the world seemed to pillory me, sent me all this hate mail saying I shouldn't have done that. That was a horrible thing for a woman to do. What are you doing barging into men's world? And then the other people made me out to be Joan of Arc and said, you know, you're putting your picture on my mantelpiece. So, you know, I threw away the bad mail and I just focused on becoming a good athlete. I did win the New York City Marathon. I ran a 2:51 at Boston. So I became a good athlete and shut people up about women's incapability. And at the same time, other women began running with me and legislating with me. And we legislated to get the women official in the Boston Marathon of all places first. 5 years later, still took 5 years, in 1972. But then began a crusade for me to really make women's running significant. And I accomplished that by organizing a global series of races. I went to corporate sponsorship. You know, that really speaks volumes. I went to Avon Cosmetics and told them this is what I wanted to do. Let me create this program. And they loved it, and they hired me. And we eventually put on 400 women's races in 27 countries for over 1 million women. And with the statistics and data from those races, we could convince the International Olympic Committee to put a women's marathon in the Olympic Games, which we did in 1984. So that was warp speed for the International Olympic Committee. And that changed the landscape, because everybody around the whole world, you know, no matter where you live, knows that 26 miles or 42 kilometers is a long way. And that translates, it speaks volumes. And it also gave women equality in the Olympic Games, at least in track and field and in running. With a level of men in the most arduous.
Well, event. And then of course we, you know, with that first marathon in 1984, our mutual friend Joan Benoit Samuelson from America won it.
Yeah.
And you know, you laid down the foundation for all of this actually transpiring? Because, you know, if you think the Boston people were saying that women would sort of faint and they're so fragile, you can only imagine what the Olympic guys were saying and saying, oh, my God. We don't want them dying out there and whatever. And I remember when I was talking to Joni, I saw her about a year ago, you know, I said, God, you know, when you think back to that, she said, yeah, well, you know, I'm not fragile. I did okay. I didn't break. It was all okay. But, you know, we also mentioned you, you know, because you were so pivotal in, once again, with your courage and your tenacity, going forth and not just sitting down on your laurels and saying, okay, well, I ran Boston as the first one, but basically saying, wait a minute, there's a bigger message in this and that we need to change up thinking and we need to demystify and get rid of these myths about women's physiology and their capability, certainly in sports. And so, you know, putting together the Avon International Running Circuit was an incredible thing. I actually ran in a boatload of those because I thought it was a lot of fun. And you're right, the collegiality of women running with women is a really different experience, right?
It really is.
And
it,
I think,
it, you know, yeah, because it's all about these women, and all respect, due respect to you and me even. I mean, you know, we're not doing this to become Olympic athletes. We're doing it because it makes us feel great. It makes us feel esteemed.
Right.
It makes us feel empowered. It makes us feel confident. And it's also a lot of fun to be with other women. We've even thrown out the notion of, oh, I want to run to lose 5 pounds. There are more women runners now in the United States than men. 58% of all the runners are women. It's a trend that's also grown to Canada, France, and Japan. And these women are running because it makes them empowered. It translates to every part of their life. And basically,
that's
what it is.
And you gave them that opportunity. I think a lot of women, you know, women just have approached this really differently. One is many of them started to believe what the guys were saying. And so they had to work through, no, that's not true. And, you know, Catherine just made it very possible for us to believe that, number one. Number two, all of a sudden now we had to gear up for women. I mean, that was everything from, you know, what you wear and, you know, all the rest of it. And making it a really welcome, collegial, fun, bonding, connecting experience, which is exactly the way I saw, you know, the Avon series, which is amazing. And then, you know, since you started the Avon series and did all of that, then all of a sudden here we are, 50 years later. What was it like running the Boston Marathon at the age of 70? And by the way, I don't know what you're drinking or eating or doing. I want some of that because you look amazing. When I saw your pictures in the newspapers and back and forth, I mean, I always knew you looked amazing anyway. But oh my God, I mean, you know, this is a perfect testimony to the fact that if you take good care of yourself over the years, lay down that strong foundation, mind, body, and spirit, oh my gosh, what a payoff. So there we are. Okay, 50 years ago, and just several weeks ago was a Boston Marathon. What was it like for you mentally, physically?
Well, it's interesting that you say, you know, you take really good care of yourself. I push myself so hard, and I don't know, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know, but then several weeks and then, of course, days before the Boston Marathon. I mean, I was just really frazzled with a ton of media interviews and the weight was coming down pretty fast. Like, you know, it was hard to get in any food and all that kind of, and then lack of sleep. So I went to the starting line with total faith in my training. I had trained hard. There's no question about it. I mean, I didn't want to be out there for 6 hours and I didn't want to, you know, run badly. But it wasn't about time. It was about completion and celebration. I just really wanted to kind of enjoy the experience. So I surprised myself, actually, because I think what happens with running in me and with almost every woman I know is it unwinds this clock that we wind very tightly in our lives with time constraint, lots of obligations. You know, I'm building a foundation called 261 Fearless, which we'll talk about in a moment, which really is very, very time-consuming. It's like starting any new project or even a new business. stressful and worrisome. But when you go to the start line or you go out for your 10 or 20 or 30 minutes, whatever you have every day, suddenly the stress goes. And honestly, I looked at my face coming down in the tapes, coming down the finish line, and I said, I look better there than I have looked in the last 6 months. And it's because the pressure went away. I loved the run. The run always revives me. And every woman I know, the run revives her and inspires her. So what was it like 50 years later? Well, of course, it was night and day because the pressure was huge after the official attacked me. And I had to prove that I could finish. And it was freezing cold, and there were not very many spectators because it was so cold that day in Boston, the worst cold day in history of the Boston Marathon. This year, 50 years later, it was a warmish spring day. There were a million people. There were a million people along the course. It was just like running through a scream tunnel the whole way. Hundreds of them held up signs, go Catherine, go 261 Fearless, women's equality, we're with you all the way. It was really very, very validating because everybody knew the story and everybody knew what women had gone through. And the fact that Boston itself was almost 50-50 men-women was just a reflection of a social revolution, which is what has happened in the last 50 years. Is that you
did
know,
you
women,
run with some of your women from 261?
And I did. The 261 is named after my bib number that the official tried to pull off me. And it's a foundation. It's a movement first. It started as a movement like 3 years ago when women were writing to me saying 261, those numbers make me feel fearless. And we decided we had to do something with the power of this because there were hundreds of these letters and tattoos coming in. And we started a nonprofit, and we asked the Boston Athletic Association if they would support us, and they gave us a number of charity bibs where women who joined us for the 50th anniversary run raised money for the foundation, which now is looking forward at the next 50 years. So these 125 men and women, mostly women, raised this money, ran with me, and we effectively took a celebration look at the last 50 years and said, look what we've done. It's amazing. What's the next 50 years look like? Let's make that even more amazing. And it was like for me at 70 passing the torch. And also it was real testimony, I think, to what you just said is that, you know, what a gift I have. How grateful I am to be 70 and to be able to go to the start line of the Boston Marathon and actually run it in 4:44, not much slower than I did 50 years before when I was 20. How lucky I am to be healthy enough to do that, and to be the only woman in history now who's ever done that. You know, there's plenty of women who are 70 who run, or 80, or even 90, but nobody's run 50 years after they ran their first one. So it was a nice kickoff to healthy aging, a nice kickoff to trying to reach women globally who are fearful and give them a sense of fearlessness through our foundation, which is going to organize clubs and community programs for these women around the world where most of these women have no opportunities whatsoever. And we're going to use running as the vehicle because it always works and it's easy, cheap, and accessible. So watch this space and join 261 Fearless and start a community club. And if you go to 261fearless.org, you'll get the information, and we'll teach you how to do it.
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
how's
this
that?
Is, once again, the gift. Well, you know what it is, Catherine? It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I don't think
and
there's
you're just
a woman
keeping
alive.
This going.
Yeah, I don't think there's a woman alive who goes out and runs who doesn't want somebody else to feel as good as she does. And that's what I said to my old coach 50 years ago as we went up Heartbreak Hill. And I said, you know, it's not the race director's fault. He's just an ignorant guy who's a product of his time because my coach was still grumbling about it. I said, it's the women themselves. I said, they're fearful and they need something that will get them out here to feel as good as we feel. And it's as simple as putting one foot in front of the other. But Pam, you know it as well as I do with all the hundreds of thousands of women you work with. You can't understand it until you put your shoes on and do it. And you can talk to your blue in the face, but when you feel it in your gut and your heart, that's when you understand what self-esteem and empowerment feels like. And we've got to take that to women. You change women, you change the world.
Well, I love it. And I've told tons of women about the 261. And here's what I hear a lot of times. So we need your counsel and advice, all right? I'm too fat. I'm too out of shape. I don't want to be out there with a bunch of skinny runners who all know what they're doing. There's all this sort of shame, blame, guilt stuff going on with a lot of women who are afraid to take that first step. And it's not like, you know, I don't know where to buy, you know, running sneakers or any of that. It's just that they feel kind of funky about themselves at all kinds of interesting ages. And what do you say to someone who looks at, you know, you at the age of 70? I mean, you look phenomenal, but you look like a classic, beautiful runner. And the grand majority of women out there don't look like that. So
what happens? How do we get them involved? What you saw was a long-range picture, and it's funny because at the finish line, I was greeted by a bank of cameras, and I had on my shorts instead of capris, which hid my legs. I wore shorts. It was a hot day. And I said, you know, my legs are not beautiful like they were when I was 28. You know, they're gnarly. I've got varicose veins. I said, I'm 70 years old, and I just ran the Boston Marathon, so I deserve to have gnarly-looking legs. You know, you embrace what you have. I got to tell you something. Nobody cares, ladies. What they care about is how you feel, and you deserve to feel good. You're never too old, slow, or big to begin to walk or run. Just get out, go watch any fun run or race, and you'll see people all ages, all sizes, all shapes. You'll see crippled people who overcome the impossible. Come on, you know, just you deserve to feel this good. And if you're shy about it, put on your baggy old clothes and go out early in the morning when nobody sees you and shuffle around the block. Put on sunglasses and that, but then you go out and realize nobody cares. Nobody cares. You know.
Yeah, I think that you know men don't have that issue. I notice. You know, they could go out there looking totally scary. You know, with the extra belly hanging out with all the little hair on it and everything, and they don't care. It just sort of blobs along and back and forth, and eventually, you know, they get in better shape and they're all good. But they just honestly don't care. Women, on the other hand, we're just sort of, you know, built differently.
Yeah,
we're just,
but here's my,
you know,
here's
how do I look out
tip.
There? Huh?
Here's my number one tip with that. Go get a buddy. Get a neighborhood friend of yours.
Now we're talking.
Okay. Who, you know, your friends, you're not going to judge each other. And you go out and meet, promise you're going to meet, you know, someplace every day. And you go out for three times a week together. You'll tell each other the secrets of your soul. And then screw up your courage after a while and enter a local 5K fun run. And run, walk it together. And nobody's going to laugh. They're only going to applaud you. And if you say, I don't want to be last, well, you should be thrilled to be last because they get the biggest applause, the person who comes in last. You'll
I
surprise yourself.
I love it.
And when people say,
I love it.
Well,
no, it just, it works. It really works.
It
you
does.
Know, I ran my first marathon in 1998. Again, thanks to you, we were able to do this. This was Marine Corps Marathon in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh. A good race.
And which is a really fun first marathon, by the way. It doesn't have like monster hills or anything until the very end when they got really evil with that, you know, that last piece before the finish line. But, you know, so I was out there doing my thing. Now, the first thing that just made me laugh, I just have to tell you this, and I want all my wonderful listeners out there in her podcast land to listen up, okay? So I show up, and I had a handful of friends, all of whom were going to chant, you paid to do this to yourself at every 5 miles, okay? So they were just going to find me at every 5 miles and make me laugh, you know? So I said, okay, fine, we can do that. And so I showed up, and I'm all by myself. I'm not even kidding you. I didn't have anyone there. I trained pretty much by myself. Jeff Galloway ended up being, you know, the Olympian, ended up giving being one of my wonderful friends and mentors, as well as you. And so what I did was I showed up, and I swear, I thought everyone there was going to be a Kenyan or someone from, you know, Somalia or, you know, someone, all these little skinny, tiny people. And I was, you know, going to be, hi, I'm from Amazonia, because I'm built more like a triathlete, which is what I am. And instead, I saw people, like you said, of all sizes, ages. I mean, it was just amazing. So suddenly I was like, wow, this is a new experience. And then I thought, who made me believe that it was only, you know, little classic running like looking people? Then I got to tell you a quick story. When I finally got across over to Independence Avenue, I think we were heading up toward the 16-mile marker before we go to Haynes Point, which everyone calls Heinous Point, which loops around. It's horrible. You know, you just want to cheat and run across. You know, it's like, damn, I hate these horseshoes. But so there I was. And I'm running along. It's a gorgeous day in Washington, D.C., sun out, whatever. Then this young woman, and I would say she's easily 15 years younger than I was at the time, quite young. She was running up, you know, kind of close to me. You know how you make friends out there in marathon land? You're running along, say, hey, you know, and maybe talk a little bit and whatever. So she comes up and I looked at her and she had this gorgeous smile on her face. I also noticed she was probably about my height. I'm 5'9". I'm good and tall. She appeared to be probably 40 pounds heavier than me-ish, maybe even a little bit more. So I'm thinking, wow, she's really got quite the little pace here. we're running along. And then finally, as we were just talking briefly, I said, you have a smile on your face. It's just glowing. Is this your birthday or something? And she said, oh, no, but I am celebrating something special. I said, tell me all about. She says, I'm celebrating the 1-year anniversary of dropping 50 pounds, and I'm working on the next. My jaw hit the floor, just hit the floor. And here she was, just as happy as a clam, and she is a living epitome of what you said. She doesn't care what other people say. She's glowing. She's loving it. She's a good 15 miles into it. And she is celebrating, you know, and really at the end of the day, she's celebrating you, Catherine, for the opportunity to be able to get out there and do this in the first place. She's now a runner. So I love stories like that. I know that you have like an eternal number of stories like that, but I just thought I'd share that, you know, to kind of exemplify what you've been talking about. Does that make sense, Catherine?
Yes, it does, and it's very validating, Pam. It's really nice of you to share that with me. Really sweet. Thank you. Yeah, gorgeous, gorgeous. But every
so now, what do you do?
Well, every
so now, what do you? I mean, you know, you've got your 261. What do you envision 261 looking like a year from now, 2 years from now? What's your goal?
Well, the goal is that we're going to have community programs in places where women don't have opportunities or want more opportunities or need more opportunities. And so, I mean, it could be the Mideast, it could be North Africa, or it could be, you know, your next door neighbors group. You know, we want women of all ages, sizes, abilities, and we're forming this is what we're doing. We're forming community clubs called 261 Fearless Clubs. We are training women to organize the club to create a non-judgmental community of women. It's not about being an elite runner. It's not even necessarily about running. I mean, they could even get together and walk. But we want them to move because that's where empowerment comes from, that sense of movement. And so we know that women will change and be empowered if they have the opportunity. We just need to get that to them. And we know that this works. So that's what it looks like is I imagine the proliferation of these clubs in communities in different cultures that adapt and abide by the different cultures in those countries. You don't go in there and say, hey, this is the way you do it. You have to do what works in the culture. And we're hoping that this can happen in public, but you know, in some places, women are not even allowed to go out of a house or drive a car or get an education. So that's going to be challenging, but I think we can overcome it. The bigger thing maybe actually is we have created already a really good global platform of communication, and women can join this group and learn get friends all around the world through our closed portal where they can talk to each other. Sometimes in life, you just need to know you're not alone out there. So those are the two big things, women communicating with each other. We have a powerful internet now where that can really, really work for us. Women are on mobile devices everywhere, even poor women. The local clubs, we're going to also have events. We have incredible reach with merchandising as well. Adidas has come on board as one of our major sponsors, which is fabulous. I mean, that is talking about a global reach. That's huge. And we also are looking at events so that we can actually stage some events where women can participate. But the heart and soul are the women themselves, direct touch each other, communicating with each other. And we think that the community club, where they get together at least once a week, put everything else behind them, join together non-judgmentally, and exercise together, is the thing that's going to do it. So that's what I see it looking like.
Oh, my gosh. And what is that website again?
261fearless.org.
261fearless.org. Okay, and then women could just go there. It's fully explanatory.
Yep.
I've gone there, and it's very straightforward. Now, what are you going to do now? You're 70 years old. You have made history 50 years ago. You continue to make history. So what are your plans for yourself now? Are you running more marathons? What are you doing outside of the 261?
Well, 261 is pretty all-consuming right now. And we call it 261 rather than 261 because that 261 singular digits actually translate into different languages much more easily than like the word 61. So 261.
Ah.
I see myself, I'm in pretty good shape right now. So I am planning on running the New York City Marathon. That's an event I won in 1974, but that's when it was back in Central Park. I've actually never run through the streets of New York. By that time, I was doing TV broadcasting. And so I am going to celebrate by actually running through the streets in the five boroughs and enjoy myself next November. I guess it's time, well past time, to be writing my fourth book, which is going to be all about the women listening today and about, 261 and changing the world. Instead of a look back, it's going to be a look to the future. And I'm going to do an audio record of Marathon Woman. So by November, everybody can put on their earphones when they go out for their morning jog and listen to me. And finally, Dr. Peek, I am going to try to clean my house. Honest to God, I have got papers and Chaskas piled up to the ceiling in every room. And I've got to find a home for this, and I've got to straighten out my life and plant a few petunias.
Yeah, and for women out there, I can guarantee you they're all wondering, does she ever see her home? She's out there, really being a change catalyst for all of us, a change agent, and working so hard and training and back and forth. You must have the family from heaven, to support you. You really do.
I do.
Right?
Everybody is extremely tolerant of the fact that I'm rarely at home, but I have the most amazing husband in the entire world. It took me a while to find him, but I did. And he is so incredibly supportive and bright and wonderful and understands. I mean, he's a scholar, a historian. Everybody knows Roger Robinson was a top runner from New Zealand for many, many years, top runner in the world. And actually, interestingly enough, Roger Robinson's name is the one that is engraved in the finish line in Boston at Copley Square for setting a course record and winning the Masters in 1984. My name has never been engraved there because I've never actually won the Boston Marathon. So there you go.
Wow. Oh my God. I'm looking at this and saying, are you flipping kidding me? Right? What a story. Well, I want everyone again to remember that we're talking to Catherine Switzer, and so many of us now know her as the Marathon Woman. She was the first one as a woman to sign up for the Boston Marathon 50 years ago in 1967 and to complete it with some really harrowing journeys on that 26.2-mile course in the beginning. And go on right, the Marathon Woman, Running and Walking for Women Over 40, and to co-author 26.2 and Marathon Stories. And you can learn more about her amazing life at marathonwoman.com, and as well, go to 261 Fearless for her foundation work and to join on and to start up your own club anywhere you are globally so that you can be part of this really extraordinary network of support and kindness and non-judgmental encouragement, and to be able to really feel what Catherine has articulated so superbly in her books, in her writings, in her radio and multimedia work. Now we get a chance to be able to spend some time with you, and what a gift that is. So, Catherine, thank you once again for being on the Her podcast.
Thank you, Pam. Wonderful to be here, and good luck to everybody, and be fearless.
All right. And remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And please take 30 seconds and just rate our wonderful podcast and leave us a review, because I read these things and I love them. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our Her show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.